to welcome you today to the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. I'll let the record reflect that today is the 26th, Thursday. We have present Representative Keller, Representative Cisna, and Co-Chair Heron, Bob. And I'm Kathy Munoz, chairing the meeting today. On the agenda, we have three bills. We have HB 10, a municipal taxation and cost exemption bill presented by Representative Gruenberg. We also have on the agenda HB 106, which is a bill dealing with the Village Public Safety Officer Program and presented by Representative Jewell. And finally, HJR 15, presented by Representative Kawasaki, having to do with the naming or renaming of Mount McKinley to Mount Denali. To begin, we have first on the agenda HB 10, municipal taxation bill offered by Representative Gruenberg. Representative Gruenberg, would you like to come forward, please?
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
Good morning, members. Thank you very much for hearing the bill. This is an old friend with several changes in it. It was very similar to the bill that passed the House last year, or 2 years ago, in the 25th legislature. It has a variety of municipal tax exemptions. And as you probably know, in order to allow a municipality to have a municipal property tax exemption, requires an amendment to Title 29. They have to be permitted under state law. And that's why we've had a variety of things added into this bill to allow these updates in the either mandatory or optional tax exemptions to pass through and become law at the local level. And Section 1 is a new section that was suggested by Representative Chenault. This has been a Chenault-Gruenberg bill for the last several legislatures, and it's kind of grown. This was his suggestion in the Senate Finance Committee last year, and it's at the request of the Kenai Peninsula Borough, and it allows taxes, a borough that collects taxes on behalf of a municipality in the borough, such as, in this case, the Kenai Peninsula Borough on behalf of either the city of Soldotna or the city of Kenai, I don't know which, to charge the city a fee for the costs of collection. And I'm not aware of any opposition to that. It's certainly fair to the borough because they shouldn't have to do it without being able to recoup the costs. Section 2 was added by then Speaker Harris on the floor of the House last year or the year before, I forget which, which extends the real property municipal tax exemption, and that's mandatory for people who are over 65 or over, and also widows and widowers of those folks, and also disabled veterans to get municipal tax exemptions. And this is a modest extension, but important to a small group of people, Madam Chair, who are the widows or widowers of people who have qualified as disabled veterans, so that if a disabled veteran passes away, sometimes from war wounds, then the widow isn't thrown out in the street. And Co-Chair Heron asked at our informal conversation whether widows and widowers would cease being eligible if they got remarried. The answer to that, according to the Steve Van Zandt, who's the state assessor, who I believe is on the phone and can answer questions and confirm, is yes, that if there's a remarriage, it terminates the eligibility. Section 3 was a provision that was added in the Senate to raise the optional municipal tax exemption for residential property from $20,000 to $40,000, and I believe that will be removed shortly, so I don't think we have to dwell on that. Section 4 is a provision that was added in the House Finance Committee. It was, as I say, before the House when it was passed last time, not a new provision, that would allow property of a private nonprofit college or university that's accredited to that is not subject to the mandatory tax exemption to get a tax exemption, and other provisions of law still apply, but this was done specifically for a piece of property that is owned by Alaska Pacific University. It's a medical building. It's on the campus. The people who are staffing the medical building are adjunct professors, and they teach healthcare courses at the university, and the students at the university take those courses. It's an integral part of the university, and it ought to get the exemption. Everybody felt that was fair. Section 5 is a provision that was added at the request of Representatives Olson and Representative Stoltz in the Finance Committee. It had been offered, we had talked about it in this committee when the bill came through, didn't do it then, but did it in a later committee, to provide a new optional tax exemption for an ordinance that's ratified by the voters. It has to be ratified by the voters. This is one of the few provisions in here that is, that would exempt or partially exempt from taxation property of a fraternal organization if it's used for these public purposes. And the reason for this is because in many communities, these halls are used as the community meeting hall. And I think in Haines that may be the case, I'm not sure. But I know it is in a number of communities. Doesn't really often happen to be the case in Anchorage that I'm aware, but it might be, but it certainly is helpful to the rural folks. And the original bill was Section 6, which is the cop in the neighborhood bill. That is an optional provision allowing an ordinance to exempt in designated areas that are high crime areas, the primary residence for police officers up to $150,000 who move into the area. And this is very important in some parts of the state. It was important, I don't know if it still is, but it was at least at one point for Representative Chenault on the Kenai and the Nikiski area. Very important in places like Mountain View that I represent. I live in a property and live in a high crime area that at one time did have a peace officer living there, hasn't had for at least a decade. When it did, the crime went down. Now it doesn't, the crime's back up. And just having a marked police vehicle and a known person in the area not only deters crime, but makes that person available 24/7 if there's an emergency. The final section, Section 7, is an effective date to make it effective the beginning of the calendar year next year, which I think would be ease in tax collecting. Thank you for hearing the bill.
Great. Thank you, Representative Gruenberg. Are there questions for Representative Gruenberg? No. Okay. Is there additional testimony here today? I know we have several people online to testify. No. Okay. Vernon Marshall, are you online?
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're here. Okay. Thank you. With the Public Safety's Employee Association. For the record, could you state your name and
yes.
affiliation officially? Thank you.
My name is Vernon Marshall, and I do contract lobby work for the Public Safety Employees Association. Madam Chair, members of the committee, we have submitted a statement in support of House Bill 10. We appreciate the fact that Representative Gruenberg and Chenault have introduced the legislation. Our comments relate primarily to Section 6 of the bill, and we view it as one tool or one means to, you know, attract officers to areas that have been designated within a community as possibly high crime, and it does provide a slight incentive for the officer in terms of tax relief to reside in that area, and we see it as a tool. It's not mandatory. Where the decision should be made is at the local level, and local folks can use this as one means to fight crime. So with that, I'd be glad to answer questions.
Thank you very much. Are there questions? No. Okay.
Thank you
very much. Dr. Douglas North from the Alaska Pacific University, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hello.
Hello,
how are you today?
Munoz, how
yes,
are you?
Yes, nice
and
to hear.
All the representatives in the room.
Great. It's nice to have you with us today. Dr. North, would you like to present your testimony?
Yes, I would like to testify on behalf of this bill, and particularly the provision relating to Alaska Pacific University. It doesn't do so by name, but that is the category that is mentioned as a category into which we fit. I believe that you have before you entered into this hearing three letters. Two letters and one resolution. The two letters are from then-Mayor Mark Begich of Anchorage. A second letter from President Mark Hamilton of the University of Alaska. And then third, a resolution that was passed by the Anchorage Assembly, all speaking in favor of a tax exemption of this sort for Alaska Pacific University. I might say that when the Assembly passed its resolution, it was taking into account what is now 50 years. APU was founded as AMU in 1959, 50 years of public service and economic contributions to Alaska and Anchorage. On the economic side, $200 million since I've been here, since 1995, all of it spent locally, and this is not redistributed state money, but money that comes from personal contributors and, of course, from tuition dollars. We get no money from the state of Alaska or any other institution on a regular basis to which we are beholden. So we're a private independent university. They took into account also the huge amount of public service that APU offers now and has offered over the years. We basically maintain a 175-acre park for the public in Anchorage. We have a Mosley Sports Center used heavily by the public. We have a ski training center that offers junior and senior programs, and I could go on. But one of the most important things that we do is to put between $1.2 and $1.5 million annually at the present time into scholarships for Alaska students, specifically for Alaska students to enable them to attend Alaska Pacific University. As you may know, Alaska Pacific University is now the only remaining private university or college in the state of Alaska that's accredited as the ordinance indicates. Now, how do we do this? Well, 60% comes from net tuition. The other 40% comes from contributions, income from our foundation, and an entity called the endowment lands that is portions of our campus, totaling currently about 25 acres, which are developed in order to produce income streams into the academic budget of the university itself. And that accounts for about 12% of our income. Up until just 3 years ago, all of those lands and the developments on them, there's about four developments altogether, were untaxed, and APU had never been taxed in any way since its origins in 1959. However, the municipality did impose a tax upon one building, as Representative Grunberg indicated. And the thing is that APU is a land-grant university also. Its campus was transferred from the BLM in 1956, and it was urged to use those lands in order to support the university, just as with any land-grant university. But in this particular case, the income stream has to be directed specifically towards elements in the curriculum, a rule that we have abided by very carefully, and in this case did also, as Representative Grunberg has pointed out. So I think the important thing to see is that when the Anchorage Assembly passed its resolution, it urged the legislature to enact legislation that would level the playing field with the University of Alaska so that we would fall into the same kind of categories of tax exemption as the state's public university would have. All the concerned parties agree, the mayor of Anchorage, the Anchorage Assembly, and President Mark Hamilton of the University of Alaska, that we should be free to carry out our BLM purpose without taxation. However, the municipality does need an action from the state legislature in order to in order for it to be possible to do so, and this particular legislation is pointed in that direction. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Sisna has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And really, it's Madam Chair, it's more of a comment and a thank you. And President North, as a neighbor in the University Medical area of Anchorage and District 22 that I've lived in now for 30 years, what I have been struck by is the enormous amount of service that ABU does for the community, both just in the use of your lands. It's essentially an extension of several parks because of the way that the position of the university, and also artistically and intellectually for the community. And I also want to thank Representative Grunberg for this bill, because it is a nice way to actually do something that is needed by a very important part of our community. And so I'm very much in favor of this, and thank everyone very much for it.
Great. Thank you. Are there additional questions? No. Dr. North, this is Kathy Munoz.
Yes, hi, Ken.
Hi. Just curious what the tax liability for the past 3 years has been, and would this, are you currently in negotiations over that liability, or is it?
Well, yes, we have challenged the taxation locally, but everyone here wants it to happen, but it really takes the legislature to do it. So, yes, we have been. We have challenged the taxation. We've escrowed the taxes in a separate account here at Alaska Pacific University. The taxes on this building amount to about $250,000 a year, but they're also beginning to pile up penalties. We have gone to Superior Court, but no one wants it really to go to court. This is the easier path, and the one that both the municipality and the university agree is the best way to solve the situation.
Thank you. So the bill would provide retroactivity to the municipal's claim that the university is liable for the past?
It's not in the current bill, but of course we would like that.
Okay. Are there questions? Additional questions? Thank you, Dr. North.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Also online, we have Steve Van Sant, the state assessor.
Representative Minoza, this is Steve Van Sant, state assessor. I really don't have any testimony. I'm here to answer any questions that might arise.
Okay. Are there questions for Mr. Van Sant? Okay, great. Representative Gruenberg, if you could come forward to answer any additional questions, and then we'll close public testimony.
I do have a comment.
Okay, sure.
And this is for Dr. North. Dr. North, through the chair, if I may. Are you still on the line?
Yes, I am. I was muted, but now I'm not.
if I may inquire.
Sure.
The issue of retroactivity is something that I wasn't aware of until now. And, Madam Chair, I would ask if the committee's willing to move the bill, that the bill move, and I can talk to Dr. North and see about putting that in, if necessary and appropriate, in a future committee. Mm-hmm. But I really don't want to delay this, because this bill's been around a long time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. If I may, I'd like to add one thing, because this is an issue that has sometimes come up for legislators as to whether this kind of thing offers APU an advantage over the private sector in the development of buildings for various entities. And I want to make it clear that the tenants who are in the building pay absolutely top market prices. It's not being used as an advantage in negotiations in the development of the property. The only value in tax exemption would accrue to the university and to the academic programs supported by the exemption.
Thank you, Dr. North. Are there additional comments or questions? Yes.
I don't know who the question is for, but there's been some talk about Section 3, and I was just to get an idea, I'm totally unaware. The $20,000 exemption for residential, is that commonly used? Is that what are the circumstances? Maybe that be for the sponsor, but what are the circumstances that it does get used? And just
I can answer. As a former chair, finance chair for the municipality, it's a tool that can be used. It's not used often, but it is. It does give the municipality, or the governing body, the ability to provide some relief in certain special circumstances.
I believe, if I may, that we have Representative Kawasaki here from Fairbanks. They use it in Fairbanks, I know, and I would defer to him if you wish to pursue that line of questioning. He was on the assembly there.
No. Great, thank you. Are there additional comments? Okay, thank you, Dr. Norton. Hello?
Representative Munoz?
Yes, sir.
This is Steve Van Sant. If I could, to clarify that for the committee, that residential exemption is actually used in several municipalities. It's used in Anchorage, it's used in Fairbanks, Kenai, Valdez, Bristol Bay, and the North Slope Borough. So all municipalities except for the Kenai Peninsula Borough actually do it based on a percentage up to the $20,000, and the Kenai Peninsula Borough gives a flat $20,000. So I hope that clarifies any questions that might come up about that.
Mr. Van Sant, do they give it automatically to all residential property owners, or is it done on a case-by-case basis?
No, it's not done by a case-by-case. It's all residential property. It's all owner-occupied.
Okay, so everybody receives the exemption in those jurisdictions?
Through the chair, all individuals who own their property and reside in it receive the exemption.
Okay, great. Thank you. Representative Cisna.
Am I correct, Mr. Van Sant, in understanding that when it applies to the certain designations, that there's an election voter approval that's required?
Through the chair, Representative Cisna, that's correct. It has to have voter approval before the exemption goes into effect.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Van Sant. For the record, I'd like the record to indicate that we have been joined by Representative Millett. Thank you.
Thank
you. Okay, are we ready to close testimony? Okay. Thank you very much, Representative Gruenberg. Go ahead. Representative Co-Chair Herron.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. the committee before it has House Bill 10, the S version, and this is the we take action on. This version is what we take action on. At this time, I'd offer amendment number one is to drop Section 3, and dropping it just means that the $20,000 would stay in place in statutes.
Okay. Is there objection to the motion? Hearing none, the amendment is approved. And can we have a motion on the bill, please?
Motion.
Did we move the bill?
Madam Chair, a motion to adopt an amended S version per the amendment, and that I would make a motion to move it from committee with individual recommendations.
Okay. Is there objection to moving the bill today? Hearing no objections, we will move the bill, and we thank everybody for testifying today, Representative Gruenberg. Thank you. Just have a couple of minutes to get to the next bill, which is HB 106.
Kathy.
Yes.
It's coming around.
Okay, Representative Jewell, thank you for joining us. And Representative Jewell's staff, Elizabeth Hensley, thank you. This is HB 106, having to do with the Village Public Safety Officer Program. And I'll turn it over to Representative Jewell to make the presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before you, you have a CS for House Bill 106. It's 26-LS0402/E, Luckup, dated 2/25/09, and I would ask that that committee substitute for this bill be adopted by the committee.
Madam Chair, make a motion to adopt the E version CS for House Bill 106.
Okay, is there objection? Hearing no objection, we have before us the CS for House Bill 106. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and members of the rest of the committee. This is getting to be a habit. Can we set another date? No. I'm Reggie Jewell, for the record, Representative Reggie Jewell, House District 40. And at this point, to go over the bill, I'd like to ask Elizabeth Hensley to cover the bill.
Good morning.
Good morning.
For the record, my name is Elizabeth Segula Kensley, and this bill in front of you is an attempt to change the Village Public Safety Officer program to enable municipalities to administer and receive grant funding for the VPSO program in an attempt to ensure that all villages in Alaska can have a VPSO if they don't have one already. And this has come about. It's been in the works for about 5 years, mostly, well, in Representative Jewell's district, there are very few VPSOs. There's one VPSO, and it's because things are just not working out with the nonprofit Native Association or Native Corporation running the program. They've been trying to, and it's not working out. And so I guess this would enable the Northwest Arctic Borough to take on the program as the community agrees should happen. So that is the kind of the intent of this bill. And we've got, I think, the weather up in Cosby, there's a blizzard right now, and people aren't making it into work right now. But hopefully we've got some people on the phone who can testify further as to the need for this change.
Yes, we do. We have several people online to testify. Before we continue, though, I'd like the record to show that we've been joined by Representative John Harris. Thank you, John. Go ahead, Reggie.
And if I could, just to add to Elizabeth's comments, this has been a joint effort between Manilok Association and the borough, and they have been working in tandem for several years toward this end, and I think we also have the commissioner online, and so this has been an effort that's been ongoing for a period of time, and has finally reached a place where I think we for us to present a bill.
Okay, great. Are there questions for Representative Jewell or Ms. Hensley?
Madam Chair.
Yes, our co-chair Heron.
Thank you. A question to Representative Jewell and to Elizabeth is, we're looking at the CS versus the original bill, and of course there's significant change between where the focus in the original bill was boroughs, now it's municipalities. Could you please explain that?
Yes. Segalik?
Okay. Yes, this is a change that was recommended by the commissioner's office. They were hoping that every time there to make it possible for boroughs and other subdivisions of the state to administer the program, so that it's so that next time there's a community that whose native corporation is unable to administer the program fully, that we don't have to come back and get a new piece of legislation in order to make that happen. And
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Millett.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to see you. You're doing a great job. I just have a question. Of those programs now currently that are being run by nonprofits, What would happen to those? Would they be taken from the nonprofit and put into the municipality? How does that transfer take place? Because are some of the programs working with the nonprofits and some not working? And how do you perceive that transfer?
Okay, thanks for that question. Through the chair, Representative Millett, The program is working really well in some areas of the state. In the Southwest, for example, it's doing wonderfully. And so the intent is to let the places that are doing well and that have it figured out continue their efforts and not to take the program away from them. And the intent is just to, I guess, enable more flexibility in the program where to allow in an area where a nonprofit corporation doesn't have the capacity or just isn't for some reason or another able to run the program, to allow somebody else to another entity that wants to step in and that can, it will allow them to do that.
Mm-hmm. And who makes that determination? Is it a determination by the commissioner? Is it a commissioner goes in and then determines, does it, there's an assessment of the current program in place to make sure that, I guess my fear would be is that if a nonprofit thought they were doing a good job and then all of a sudden they're told they're not, I just want to make sure this transition is smooth and that language is in place so we don't just willy-nilly go yank the authority from the nonprofits.
Great. Through the chair, I think that's really, really important because it is having to do with the public safety of communities. And the way that this has come to be is that Manilook Association and the borough together have been having these conversations, and the commissioner's office has been involved too. And I think that's the model that we would look at to, you know, when the change was being made in a community. So I don't think that the possibility for yanking the program out is there, especially because the commissioner's office is the one that does the contracting with the Native Corporation or would do the contracting with the borough, for example. And so they wouldn't have to enter a contract if they didn't feel like the community was on board in order to have a successful public safety program. I think the community has got to be on board. And so I think through that method of having the discussions and the contracting process, that would, I think, minimize the possibility of yanking the program out from somebody and giving it to somebody else without the discussion happening.
Okay, great, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Sisna?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question is, this is something that I know just in my travels to communities, just how absolutely imperative the VPSO presence is in a community, and when it's not there, how things just don't work, because you need to have that kind of position in a community to try to help the community kind of survive. There's a lot going on in our communities, but what I don't understand is the different kinds of powers that communities take on. Barrow has the public health. They have a health department, Anchorage has the city police. Is this any way like that? And kind of how does this work? Is it completely different?
You want to speak to that?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Sisna, the instances that you have given are those of boroughs and their level of powers that each borough may assume as a political subdivision. You used Barrow as an example. They have assumed as a home rule borough, they've assumed the power of health, they've assumed the power of public safety. That is not the case, for instance, in the Northwest Arctic Borough. But and you know, there are some communities, cities, incorporated municipalities that have taken on their own they have their own police departments.
Mm-hmm.
And this wouldn't impact any of that. But
okay.
But for an area that maybe has not assumed it and where And in the case of the instance that we're talking about, the Northwest Arctic Borough and Manilik Association, these two entities have worked toward this end for a number of years to provide this service, and it would be simply allowing the borough to take over this particular agreement with the state and allows the commissioner the flexibility to be able to do that. They can't do it without this law taking effect.
Okay. Thank you. Wow.
Okay. Are there additional questions? Representative Millett.
I just have one clarifying question. Do you know the reason why municipalities and boroughs weren't included in managing the VPSO program prior to this? Is that why it was just a nonprofit? Was there a specific reason why they went with a nonprofit versus a organized city or an borough? Do you know what I'm saying? Is there a reason why they were exempted or they were not allowed?
I think it was an effort to work with the outlying areas of the state, and quite frankly, at the time, there weren't very many boroughs mm-hmm. out there, and I think this was an effort to keep this at a local level, for lack of a better word, I guess right now, as possible, and yet, in this instance, it go back to it's been an agreement with the native nonprofit and the borough. To try and do this together. Mm-hmm. And the commissioner, I believe, is online, and he may have better information on that.
Thank you. And then just a question, and how do the native nonprofits feel about this legislation? Are they accepting of this? I know, I imagine Manilik is very accepting, but are there other native corporations that are worried, nonprofits that are worried that the municipalities and boroughs may come in and... is everybody on board with the program?
We have not heard from anyone because it isn't the intent to take it away. It's right. The intent to have an area that wants to do this, to give them the flexibility to be able to do it.
To widen the opportunity?
Yep, okay. And still provide the service to a given area. But it's not the intent of the legislation to take it away from the nonprofit associations. That is not the intent at all.
One more question. Mm-hmm. Sorry to keep asking questions, but so is there a preference of how this would work? Would the municipality, would it just go out to contract? Would there be a preference given to a native nonprofit over a municipality? Is there any preferential,
I think the preference involved would be what the community is asking for. And I think through the conversations with the community, that would kind of be fleshed out, looking at who has the capacity, who has the will to do it. And right now, the Northwest Arctic Borough feels that they've got the capacity, and Manilik thinks that might be the best place for this program to be housed there. So I can't imagine that there would be an automatic preference given, and that's certainly not reflected in the law. That would all be come to through discussions.
Okay. We have Representative Millett. Are you finished, or would you like an additional?
No, that's good.
Okay. You can ask additional, of course, questions. Okay. Representative Keller.
Thank you, uh-huh. Chair. You may want to defer this to the commissioner. You're doing a great job, by the way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Reggie, thank you. I'm a little confused of why we need the law. In other words, surely an organized municipality has the power to contract and receive money. I don't see any other departments listed, so I'm missing something just on the big picture. I'm saying why be specific here on that, why not Department of Education or whatever? What's going on here? I'm missing it.
Through the chair, Representative Keller, I think it's in order to participate in this specific program, we've got to have this amendment to the law, because this program there's a training component. It's a pretty detailed program. There's a training component, there's a financial component, there's a discussion component with the commissioner, and so I think in order to be part of this specific program, we've got to amend the law. I think it's true that some boroughs, home rule boroughs, have they can exercise law enforcement powers, but that might be something that is down the road. I don't know how many years, but in order to get I think the goal is to get a village public safety officer in every village, in every village that we can get one into. And so this would help to speed that process up. Like, for example, in the Northwest Arctic right now, there's one VPSO and 9 villages without any VPSOs. And that's, to let that situation continue on for much longer it's not a good situation. So I think that's why the law is needed. That helps.
Yes, Representative Jewell.
Through the chair, in addition to Salik's comments, I would say that you're right, that in communities, or we have many communities that have their own police departments. In some boroughs, they exercise the public safety. and as the way that this is the VPSO program was set up, why we need this law is the borough is not asked. I mean, if they wanted to assume the public safety powers that they may have as a home rule borough, would also mean that they have the financial wherewithal to do this. And in this case, the Northwest Arctic Borough does not have that capacity, but this law enables them to work a deal where the state would be contracted with a native nonprofit, transfer the ability to have that contract to provide that service and expend those funds without having to assume those broader powers. And that's what this is the attempt to do. They cannot currently do that. Because we have tried. I mean, this has been, as Elizabeth said, this has been about 5 years in the making. And when we initially approached public safety, because both the borough and Manilik Association, when they came to the conclusion that they would like the borough to take over the VPSO program, the law would not allow that to happen. And this bill would allow this to take place.
Okay. We have Co-Chair Heron has a question, and then Representative Cisna. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I support the legislation, but a couple of comments, and then, Madam Chair, I'd like to reserve pose a question to the commissioner and Mr. Glick, who's in the room later. But I guess to go back to Representative Millett's question about why was it set up originally, and I think that the comment, and from what I understand, is that there was a lot of TPOs and VPOs, tribal police officers, and village police officers in some of these regions, and so it was they felt it was important to have to start out the program working within that framework. And so I think that's where it's at. The question that, another comment, not a question, is another reason that I support this is that by changing to municipalities is that there could be instances, this is where you want to groom young men and women within municipalities that could become village public safety officers, then they could become municipal officers, then possibly they could even become state troopers. So I think this is a good stair-step approach to building careers for young men and women in Alaska.
Additional question? Did you have comment?
Reserve comment for the commissioner.
Sure. Okay, Representative Cisna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I actually, my question was actually to the commissioner, if that meets with your approval. And
in my own sometimes membership on finance subcommittees with public safety, one of the things I've seen since the early part of the 2000s was just how difficult it is to increase the number of VPSOs, that it's been, it feels like it's been steadily declining. And even with the public safety officers, it's really hard to get people in and keep people in the field. And I'm wondering if this is kind of like an administrative partnership, and that the role that the that public safety plays in this is both, is it both financial and administrative, and how does that work?
Commissioner Masters, are you online?
Yes, I am, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Joe Masters, Commissioner of Public Safety. It might, if you don't mind, I'd like to make a couple of comments, and hopefully this might answer some questions as well as provide some clarification on the intent of DPS in this as well. First, this bill is not intended to change the intent of the VPSO program or how it interacts with the nonprofit corporations currently. In some areas of the state, as was previously testified to, it is working very well and will continue to work well. In other areas of the state, it's more challenging, and it is in the best interest of the state and with proper administration of the VPSO program to look at another entity that we could provide the grant to in order to manage the program effectively. And that's the case we're in up in the Northwest Arctic Borough region. The other thing is that I want to clarify that it is a state program. The VPSO program is a state program. It's not a borough program or a municipality program, and it's not intended to provide officers to boroughs or municipalities for providing police powers. This is only intended to allow a DPS to provide the current VPSO grants to villages through another entity that can administer it better and more effectively. So I wanted to make sure I brought that out. If I can respond also on Representative Millett's question regarding why boroughs and cities weren't initially participating in this program, and I speak from a perspective of historical perspective as well. I was a VPSO originally. Not right when the program started, but very shortly after the program started. So I have a perspective of what some of the intent and the program's focus was at the time. And at the time that it was conceived, it was to put safety officers in small communities or in villages of less than 1,000 people in population, and actually probably more focus on even smaller communities. But to put those in these communities in a cooperative relationship between the state, between the regional corporations, and the individual villages to try to make those positions most effective, and also to work within those regions to get local hire and people from the local communities to do the jobs. And it also was intended not to be totally a state or a government program that was brought into these communities without input and collaboration with the communities. That was why it was originally put that way, and why I believe it continues to be that way now. However, certainly up in the Northwest Arctic Borough region, it's more effective. And as Representative Jewell had pointed out, the local region recognizes that. And that's why they've been pushing to have this bill submitted.
Thank you, Commissioner. We have a question from Co-Chair Heron and then Representative Harris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, thank you for being available, and I appreciate that your career, you've gone to the top of the ladder, so to speak, and starting out as a VPSO. But yesterday we had a briefing on the program, and Mr. Glick was kind enough to share some of his thoughts, but my question to him, and then the same question to you, is that, you know, I've been around VPSOs for a long time living in Bethel, but there was a time when it sure was a very clear attitude from the Alaska State Troopers that this was sort of an unwanted stepchild, and Mr. Glick assured us that that's not the case now, but could you, at least from your perspective, could you share if that is was a true reality and that the troopers are now embrace the importance of VPS program?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Herron. The you know, the focus on law enforcement efforts and strategies is a lot of times driven from the top down, from the commissioner through the directors to the people that are actually administering different programs and initiatives. And I don't know that I would be comfortable characterizing the prior attitudes of previous commissioners or leadership and saying that they didn't want the program. They may have certainly felt the program should be administered differently. And also, it'd be very difficult for me to be able to get in their minds and say what their focus was on at the time. I can say that my rural law enforcement strategy is to not only increase the effectiveness of our troopers in AST that are out in rural areas, but it also has to have a component where we look at local communities and our efforts at a local level with the VPSO program if we're going to be effective. So in response to your question, the attitude that I have regarding this program is that it's absolutely necessary if we're going to be effective in rural law enforcement.
Thank you, Commissioner. We have a question from Representative Harris. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, welcome on board again. Your brother says hello from Valdez, by the way. You better be careful. His daughter's a pretty sharp shooter, so you know. Commissioner, the question I have for you is, you know, in the years that Representative Jewell and I have been in the legislature, we've always had a difficult time in many of the rural areas with alcohol and drugs and sniffing gas out of snow machines and a variety of other things. And some of the some of those issues have been, or some of the remedy to trying to keep those issues under control have been more law enforcement in the areas. And as you know, it's difficult to put a trooper in every village. In fact, it's difficult to put a trooper in a lot of cities, at least at this point, seemingly. Does this bill, and the question I have for you, is this bill help to bring access to many of these smaller communities with a VPSO officer? And does it help your department to recruit or be able to get people, especially people that live in these areas, to apply and to work local communities under the VPSO program? You know, we found over the years it's been difficult to retain them, and we know it's difficult to retain troopers anymore and to keep them a lot of times. So it's kind of a long-winded question, but I want to know, does this bill help the situation? And again, you're supportive of the bill, and you know, is it a good thing for the state? Thanks.
Through the chair, Representative Harris, you know, this bill does not necessarily add VPSOs to communities that would not have been eligible for VPSOs previously. We're continuing to try to expand the capacity of the program to put VPSOs in different communities. What this bill does, though, is in areas where through the lack of ability to provide a good management of the VPSO contract or grant award, those areas that can't effectively manage them don't effectively recruit, and they're not effective in retaining people within these positions. the better a program is run and the more effective recruitment and selection of VPSOs is, and the better the support of the program, the better longevity of officers that are within the program experience, and the better the communities are off for that. So this bill does, particularly in the area of the Northwest Arctic Borough, provide another entity that can better manage the program and therefore get VPSO positions filled that may have had difficulty otherwise, and also because they would be more efficient at the program, allow us to start looking at new communities that they just hadn't been able to get on board yet. So in response to your question, I'd say yes, it does make us more effective in putting VPSOs into communities in those areas. As far as whether I'm on board with this bill, certainly, based on my testimony so far, you probably get the impression that I am, and I am. I do have some reservations in some of the language that's currently in the CS that I have. I've already voiced those with the sponsor of the bill, and I think we can work through those concerns probably between committees if it's passed by your committee.
So, Commissioner, you're on board, and the governor's on board both.
Our department's certainly working with the governor's office regarding all of the bills that we're testifying on, and I can't say that I've had a specific conversation with the governor regarding this particular bill.
The reason I point that out is that I think a number of people in rural Alaska maybe are concerned that the administration may be at times neglecting the needs of rural Alaska, and so I just want to make sure that I think you're on board, and I think the governor's on board, so I just want to try to point that out. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. Also online, we have several individuals, and I want to give them an opportunity to make a statement before testimony is closed. Thank you, Commissioner, for joining us. And if you'd like to stay online, there may be questions after the others have had an opportunity to speak. Mr. Schaefer, Bob Schaefer from the Northwest Arctic Borough. Mr. Schaefer,
yes,
are you with us?
Yes, ma'am.
I'd like to give you an opportunity to address the committee.
Thank you, and I wanted to say good morning to you all down there. We're in the midst of probably one of the worst storms we've had in a long time, so I'm calling from home because it's too bad to try to traverse over to the borough offices. I live about 50 yards from the school, and I can't see it, so that's just giving an indication. Anyway, I appreciate Monaghan's historical perspective of this of the VPSO program. At one point in time, when I was first introduced to it back in the early 70s, when I was also involved in the Native Association, the program did work. There was no red dog. The finances of the villages were very, very minimal. They couldn't afford VPOs, village police officers. So the VPSO program really provided a real spark for the villages insofar as providing law enforcement was concerned. And as time went on, the Manila Manpower used to manage it, and it's separate from the association. It was the Manpower organization that was incorporated a little differently, but they managed it for a number of years until they went belly up back in, I think it was somewhere around 2003, where they disbanded the entire organization, and there was a void because the association at the time was going through some difficulties. And they didn't accept that particular program from the then defunct Manila Manpower. But that's when the Kodiak Area Native Association took over the program and started managing it from 1,000 miles away. But we've always had problems with it since. Since then, of course, the economy has changed some. The Red Dog Mine opened up, and the salaries of pretty much the school district and the health center and that of Red Dog totally changed the income levels of the people up here. And what happened was that the VPSO program became almost ineffective simply because you couldn't pay anybody enough to come to the villages. And on top of that, there was no benefits involved with that particular program. They pay you a salary, they ship you out to the village, and wish you good luck. There was no support. There was no, very, very little vacation time allowed, simply because they were pretty much work seven days a week, 24 hours a day, and they handled more than doing a village police work. They also were involved in search and rescue and emergency situations where there was emergency evacs. So their job pretty much increased as time went on. For the last 5 or 6 years, it's been almost impossible to try to find people to fill those positions simply because the salary was so low. And there was by then the infrastructure of the villages has changed. A lot of the villages couldn't get a VPSO for a long time because nobody wanted those positions. So the old public safety buildings that were placed out there way back in the 70s pretty much were deteriorated down to where they're using for village storage and things of that nature. So that those particular pieces of the infrastructure that the VPSO program had at one point in time were pretty much gone. And I know since the last couple of years since I've been with the borough, we had two VPSOs when I first started off, and there was one in Selwick and one in Colebrook. And the rest of the villages were screaming because of the increase in alcohol and drugs in the villages and the increase of crime in the villages, and people were screaming and yelling. And at the same time, the borough had established back in 1986 a public safety commission to address a lot of the concerns that the borough residents had about public safety in general. But as the time went on, the concern for the lack of police out in the villages became quite prevalent, and in fact, it was brought up at the assembly. The assembly wanted the borough administration to try to look into the ways of trying to increase. They've been yelling for years that nothing was being done. And of course, the borough is a very small borough. We don't have the resources that like the North Slope borough. In fact, you look at their budget, their police budgets are somewhere in the neighborhood of $10 million, and ours, of course, is that all we get is in lieu of taxes that we get from Red Dog, add up to somewhere around $7 million. So you could see the disparity between what happens in the North Slope Borough, where they have a $300 million budget, versus ours. Anyway, so it was totally unaffordable for the borough to even consider this. But the Public Safety Commission and the Borough Assembly was a priority simply because there was no police protection out there. There's a number of state troopers here, but they're all in Kotzebue, and they respond after the crime has been committed in the village, and they go to investigations, and they take people out. But there's nothing in the villages to protect the folks out there. The Public Safety Commission met a number of times and had discussions with the association, Money Duck Association, who in fact got the program back from the Kodiak Area Native Association this last year. And Jackie Hill of the association have been working countless hours trying to recruit positions. But in the meantime, the person in Selwick quit, so there was only one person in Colebrook, and then they felt it better that he moved on to Shungnak, a larger village, and that's what he did. And presently, after 2.5 years that I've been with the borough, we still have that one position. We had a position filled in Norvik, but the guy had a young family, and it was too strenuous for him, so he quit. And so...
Excuse me, Mr. Schaefer?
He has had the program for about a year now and have not been able to fill any of the positions. So the Public Safety Commission made it a priority and asked the borough if they would like to take it over. Maybe they would have a better luck. Maybe you could provide some, if they became borough employees, maybe we could provide some incentive, like benefits for the first time. So,
Mr. Schaefer? Mr. Schaefer, this is Kathy Munoz, chairing the committee. We still have others here to testify, and we have another bill before us today. So if you could wrap it up, I would appreciate it. Thank you very much for your testimony.
I just wanted to say that all we're looking for is a mechanism to do this. The association has been on our case because as a home rule government, normally police powers are part of it. We've never considered it because they've done a good job in the past in managing the program. But the Public Safety Commission and the Native Association, the Manilok Association, does want the borough to contract for this service because they feel that we can put more resources behind it and probably become more successful in recruitment. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for joining us today. Also here today we have Sue Stancliffe with the department. Ms. Stancliffe, thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Chairman Munoz, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sue Stancliffe. I am Special Assistant to the Commissioner for the Department of Public Safety. I really do not have anything further to add than what the Commissioner has already added and stated. The only thing I would say is that we have made the commitment with the sponsor and his staff to work through the CS and the, a few of the language changes that we need to address. So just to let you know that we are working closely with them and look forward to doing that between now and the next committee hearing.
Great.
I think the Commissioner has pretty well answered all of the committee's questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Also online today we have Sikarik Whiting with the Northwest Arctic Borough.
Good morning.
Hello. Yes.
Good morning. I'm the mayor for the Northwest Arctic Borough. I live and work in Kotzebue and represent all of the Northwest Arctic villages in the region. Thank you for listening to me this morning. We are in absolute support of House Bill 106, and my question posed on you and the state is how can our Northwest Arctic Borough help the state of Alaska to succeed with providing public safety in rural Alaska? Public service and law enforcement is a priority for our borough administration and our assembly. And currently the VPSO program is administered by the Manilok Association, our regional nonprofit, who is doing everything in their power to provide this service in our villages. You heard before that there's 10 villages with potential VPSOs. Out of the 10, only one shares the responsibility of trying their darnest to meet the duties of the two communities. And so our challenges are many and include finding local people who will pass the background check. We have low salaries that we're dealing with. There's a lack of housing, lack of jail facilities. People are having to leave out of the region for training for long periods of time, leaving families behind. And trust me, this time of year, people are just not traveling because there are so many water and sewer freeze-ups that people are just not leaving their homes or their communities just to make sure that their homes are safe. There's lack of holding cells. And, of course, one of the other issues that we're dealing with is people don't want to have to bust their brother or their uncle or their best friend. So we have our share of challenges, but we're really up for that challenge with the Northwest Arctic Borough. And in 2006, the Northwest Arctic Leadership Team, by the instruction of the people, assigned the Northwest Arctic Borough to take the lead in public safety with our Public Services Department. Bobby mentioned, and by the way, he's the Public Services Director of the borough, he mentioned earlier that our Public Safety Commission meets. They meet on a quarterly basis to meet the needs of our village residents. And even though we have that Public Safety Commission, the majority of the phone calls with public safety come to our borough, we don't have that mechanism to administer that program. On February 24th, a few days ago, our borough assembly passed a resolution in support of this bill, and we recently hired a public safety coordinator so that we can work towards providing quality public safety in all of our villages. And in a nutshell, our smaller communities deserve this basic service, just like the rest of Alaska's larger communities do. And we feel that our borough is ready and capable to take on that responsibility. We already partner with the Alaska State Troopers, the Kotzebue Police Department, and are continuing to meet with Commissioner Masters and his staff to help each other to succeed. And as a borough, we'd like to be proactive in crime prevention by providing public awareness, youth involvement, and using local elders to teach discipline, responsibility, self-control, and leadership. So as a community-based organization, we're looking at preventing crimes. How can we build our healthier communities, starting off with the young people and changing or making sure that their lives are constructive early on before they get into that state system? And in 2007, we hosted a law enforcement summit with former Commissioner Monaghan and his staff. We looked at the statewide needs for public safety with VPSO. We saw what's working in other communities. We want to beg, borrow, and steal and see what we can do in our region to make public safety work for us. We also looked at our region's needs, and we had representatives from all the communities come forth and share their recommendations for what we should do and to provide this service. And our Public Safety Commission is going to take a look at these recommendations and prioritize the activities that we need to take place first so that we could have long, sustaining, successful public safety in our villages. And finally, we just got word the other day that there's a congressional appropriation directed to the Northwest Arctic Borough for $500,000 from the Department of Justice to provide VPSO and specific to VPSO training, planning opportunities. I wanted to thank Congressman Young for his support and to provide this service for us. So we have the congressional support for the Northwest Arctic Borough to do this specifically to support the VPSO program. And just wanted to say thank you. We absolutely support this bill. We want to say good morning and thank Iserroktok and Segalik and all of you there that are working so hard to build healthier communities and safe communities for all Alaska. And from the very beginning, you know, we made a strong effort to keep in touch with former Commissioner Monaghan, now Commissioner Masters, to ask, you know, how can we at the Northwest Arctic Borough help you to succeed in providing these public safety needs in our communities? So with that, I want to thank you, and we support House Bill 106. And if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer any questions. If not, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mayor Whiting. We appreciate you being with us today. And on behalf of the committee, I too thank you for your work and your willingness to provide a statement today to the committee. Are there questions for thank you. Are there questions for the sponsor, Representative Jewell, or any of the people that have testified today before we close testimony? Hearing no additional questions, testimony is now closed. Thank you all very much for joining us today.
Madam Chair, I make a motion to move CS for House Bill 106 E version from committee with individual recommendations.
Is there further discussion or objection to the motion? Hearing no objection, the bill will be moved from committee today. Thank you very much for thank you all for your testimony.
Thank
today.
You, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Members of the committee.
Okay. I'd like to take a brief at ease, and then we'll get ready for our next bill, which is H.J.R. 15. To order, it's 9:20, Community and Regional Affairs Committee. And before us today, we have Representative Kawasaki and his staff assistant, Mercedes Toyer. Toyer.
Thank you. Yeah.
Toyer, yes. And they are presenting a name change, the possibility of a name change for Mount McKinley to Mount Denali. And I'll go ahead and turn it over to you, Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the Sagesse Committee. I'm Representative Scott Kawasaki for the record. I represent the 9th District in Fairbanks in the interior. And Fairbanks sits about 200 feet above sea level, and on a bad day, I turn my head south, and I can see an entire landscape at the foothills of Denali. On an average day, I can see about 10,000 feet onto Denali, and it's just extraordinary. But, you know, on those really good days, and it's the reason why I'll drive to Representative Keller's district just to get to Anchorage instead of fly, on a good day, you can see the peak of Denali and the snow caps. And it is picturesque. It's a postcard. It's the reason why the peak's been around for millions of years, and it's the reason why the Alaska Natives have appropriately named the mountain Denali, meaning the high one, probably centuries ago. It's the same peak that Russians, during the fur trading years of Alaska, when we were a territory, named it Bulshaya Gora, or the Big Mountain. And it was renamed McKinley in 1896 by a gentleman named William Dickey, after a Republican candidate for the presidency. History's sort of vague as to why he did it, but that same year, as you might know, McKinley became president of the United States, so it was named after a president. About 18 months after that, McKinley was shot fatally in Buffalo in 1901, so that Denali became named after a martyred president. Yet it was a president who had never visited the state of Alaska and had no apparent connection to Alaska. I introduced House Joint Resolution number 15 to urge Congress to reconsider the name of Denali and restore the name back to the Alaskan people. There's been sort of a quiet fight in Congress for over a century naming places, and particularly Denali. In the 70s, this legislature asserted its power and helped to change the name of the park from McKinley Park to Denali National Park, which it's known as today. In 1991, Senator Ted Stevens, and I can paraphrase, said, "It's time we listen to the Alaska Native people. It's the largest mountain, and it was named by Native Alaskans long before we arrived." Since 1975, there's a congressman in the 16th District in Ohio, in Canton, Ohio, named Ralph Regula. He is, for those who don't know a little bit of the history, Canton, Ohio is where the former McKinley was born. He's blocked the naming of Mount McKinley to restore the name back to Denali on a technicality. This year, after 36 years, the senior congressman from Ohio, who's third in line, and now that he's gone, I think that Congressman Young becomes second in line. His vacancy has basically left this state an opening, I believe, that we can start discussing the debate, the policy, the naming of Denali back to its rightful name. I think it's appropriate that the name be given by the Alaskan people, as it has for centuries. The congressman, who is a senior member of Congress for 36 years, I don't think should have been allowed to block our right to name our own landmarks, but he was. Our time to move, I believe, is now, and so that's why I've introduced it. And, you know, I don't know a lot about McKinley, and I'm learning all the history right now. I respect the president, and I respect the office, and but quite frankly, McKinley's got a lot of things named after him. You Google the name McKinley or President McKinley, he's got banks and healthcare institutions and schools all across this country named after him. He's got the delicious cheeseburger from McDonald's, the McKinley Mac, named after him. And I think it's just fair time that we allow the Alaskan people to designate our own landmarks with our own name. You know, this isn't the most important bill approaching the legislature, and I've gotten a little bit of flack for it from some constituents. But even though this isn't the biggest bill, it's a two-page bill, I think that the message that we send to Congress is as grand as the mountain itself, that we are representing the people of Alaska when we assert our right in naming our own landmarks. And I think it's time that we do so. So with that, I'll close and answer any questions you might have, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there questions? Okay, well, we have, I'm sorry, Co-Chair Herron.
I'd like to adopt this A version of this joint resolution before us, and then when it's appropriate, I'd like to make some comments on the representative's efforts to do this.
Okay. We have several people signed up to testify. I think I'll go ahead and give them the opportunity, and then we'll come back to the committee for comments. Joe Thank you. First of all, thank you, Representative Kawasaki, for your testimony. Joe Antonsen with the Alaska Historical Society.
It's the Alaska Historical Commission, and if David Moore is present to testify, he's testifying on our behalf.
Okay, thank you very much. David, are you with us today?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I will go ahead and let you begin your testimony then.
Thank you. Our commission is the official board that reviews geographic name proposals prior to them being submitted to the U.S. State Board on geographic names. And our predecessor board back in 1976 initially voted in favor of this name change. And then again in 2001, the Alaska Historical Commission voted in favor of the name change. And last Thursday, we had our a quarterly meeting, and we voted again to affirm the name change to Denali. So I'm here today to speak in favor of this resolution for many of the same reasons that Representative Kawasaki has already indicated, primarily that we believe that that it's right for Alaskans to name their places, and rather than that being blocked by a representative from Ohio. We did have a comment during our meeting last week from our Native member of the commission who supports this resolution, requesting that the resolution identify the dialect of Athabascan that the name Denali comes from, rather than referring to the Athabascan language, which is just technically incorrect. I'm not a native language expert, so I would request that that be researched a little bit and the correct name or dialect be identified in the resolution. I'd be happy to answer any of your questions.
Thank you, David. That was David Moore with the Alaska Historical Commission. Also online, we have Robert Charlie. Mr. Charlie, are you with us today?
I am.
Could you state your name for the record and your affiliation, please?
Thank you. Robert Charlie, and I'm with representing my people as being a historian, gathering information on the history of our people, the Athabascan people of the town of Drainage. I am calling to voice my support of the Great Northern Mountain HJR 15 to its original Athabascan name, Denali. And speaking about Denali, that is the proper spelling for the High One. It has been a landmark for Athabascan people for thousands of years, and they the mountain should not carry another name, because it already has a name, especially for someone who has never set feet on Alaskan soil. And furthermore, a poor old prospector who came up with the idea naming the mountain that had already had a name, someone that didn't know the history of our Athabascan people of the interior. And I want to support the name change. Back in 1982, I was one of the people that helped Ted Stevens to gather some signatures to get the name change, but we ran up against a stumbling block with with the congressman from Ohio. And today I want to support Scott Kawasaki in his effort. And furthermore, if I can find the finance to go to D.C. and to speak on behalf of the name change, I'd be willing to do that also. And thank you to the committee and everybody that's pushing for this name change. Again, my name is Robert Charlie, and I can always be reached through Scott Kawasaki. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Charlie. Are there questions for Representative Kawasaki or any of the individuals that testified today? Hearing no questions, we will move to close testimony. Thank you again for everybody that came today and made the effort to let us know your feelings on this resolution.
Madam Chair, you have amendments before you. I would move amendment number one.
Is there objection to the amendment?
Madam Chair, I'd move amendment number two.
Is there objection to the second amendment? Hearing no objection, the amendment passes.
Under discussion, Madam Mayor?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Madam
Mayor.
Chair.
Madam Chair,
Bobby,
sorry.
You graduated up a little bit. Come on, now you're
my apologies, Madam Chair.
No problem.
For the record, I am in support of this resolution, but out of respect and courtesy to our 25th president, just a couple of notes. And actually, there's pretty interesting notes about William McKinley. Of course, he's a decorated Civil War veteran, and he served in Congress, and he was the governor of Ohio. What's interesting is that he was very supportive of gold miners, especially, and there's shows that he was always the one that, even out of his own pocket, he would help out miners, and so being very supportive of the gold standard, he ran on a platform in 1896 that against his opponent, which was William Jennings Bryan, who supported the silver standard, where the rest of the world had a gold standard. And so McKinley won on basically that platform. Interestingly enough is, and this is of what was a particular interest to me, especially the people I represent, is that he believed in pluralism, basically the protection of ethnic groups, minority ethnic groups within society. And so I found that very interesting that he wanted to protect ethnic groups like Athabascans and Yupik Eskimos. And so he died a very young age, at 58. He was assassinated after the mountain was named in his name because of the fight before the turn of the century, whether we should go to a gold standard or a silver standard. And so, just out of respect for that, that's why I made those statements. You know, William Dickey did name it. He was from Seattle, and he was a gold miner on the Susitna, and so he went back, and his article in the New York Sun promoted the gold standard, and so he named, because of gold in Alaska, etc., he named this in his honor. So it was topical at the time. It was very popular. And McKinley was a very popular president, so it makes sense why it happened. And so Alaska sort of got left behind in that debate. And so there's two things you Google. You Google the highest elevation in the state of Ohio. Well, it's at a nosebleed level of 1,549 feet. And so, you know, should we attempt to rename Campbell Hill after something in Alaska? I don't think so, but, you know, that's the other thing. And, you know, what's interesting about this is it's a comment that Representative Kawasaki said, this is not an important piece of legislation. Maybe we shouldn't be talking about it. But, you know, maybe we should, because, you know, right now we're talking about capital punishment, and even the sponsor of that bill and many others says it's not going anywhere, so why should we talk about it? Well, you know, it just like capital punishment, you know, this is a place to talk about things, important things and maybe less important items. And so I just make those comments, and I again support the legislation and hope we move it out of committee.
Thank you, Co-Chair Herron. Yes, Representative Gardner.
Thank you. That was actually very interesting to learn. I just wanted to say that one of the things you learn here is that everything is important to somebody. And it can seem absolutely trivial to 99% of people, but there's somebody who cares a lot about a particular issue. So I don't want to ever say something's trivial here.
That's very true. Representative Sisna.
Well, thank you. And I truly did. I've enjoyed this entire conversation. This is one of these. This hits the heart of all Alaskans in so many ways. It's really a neat bill. I thought that Representative Herron's comments about President McKinley were wonderful. And what it sounds like is that if he were sitting in this room, because of the kinds of things because of what looks like his maybe expansive way of thinking and how he understood the importance of minorities and the importance of probably the appreciation of Alaska and how much there was to it, he would have been voting yes on this one. That's what it sounds like.
I have one final comment that
sure.
I forgot to add. And,
Herron.
Is also, after you Google McKinley and then you Google Representative Scott Kawasaki, he's now on the World Wide Web. He's famous for this resolution.
Oh, great.
It's infamy.
Yes.
Madam Chair.
Representative Harris.
I just have one real serious problem here. Representative Kawasaki made a comment about the McKinley burger. is McDonald's planning on changing it to the Denali burger?
It sounds good.
Through the chair, is Representative the Harris, they're next.
Representative Millett.
Thanks, Representative Kawasaki. I think it's very timely that we're doing this on the 50th anniversary of the state, and I do also support this bill. I think that, rightly so, we should be naming our monuments, so thanks for bringing it forward. It is not trivial. I know a lot of people that circles I run in my family think that this is very important, and it should have been done a long time ago. So,
Madam Chair, in jest, Representative Harris, is that in a form of amendment?
Okay. Can we have then a motion to move the resolution, please?
Madam Chair, I would love to move.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I move. Wrong bill. Get the number. I'm sorry.
You don't get to do this.
HDR 15.
HDR 15, as amended with. Think a zero fiscal note?
Yeah.
And any individual recommendations.
Great. Thank you. Is there objection to the motion? Hearing no objection, it is ordered. Thank you very much. All right. Thank you for being here today. It's a good meeting. Is there anything to come before the committee before we adjourn? Hearing nothing. Thank you very much. It is 9:40 and we are adjourned.